welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my illustrious co-host, Mr. Robbie Duncan McNeil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, Robbie.
That's the
audience.
That's the screaming throngs of fans with it, and admirers and people with asthma.
Oh yeah. No, we're gonna get emails because of that. I know that.
I have asthma.
Okay, all right.
I was hospitalized. By the way, during Voyager, I was hospitalized at least twice.
Yes.
For asthma. I remember Mary Howard coming and checking on me in the hospital because of my asthma and trying to
change. You never told me that, Robbie. You never told me that. I never saw you with an inhaler or anything like that. For those of you who have asthma out there, because Robbie has asthma, it's okay for him to make a joke of it, I think. Yeah?
Yeah.
I think so. Hopefully you don't.
There's times when asthma can be funny and there's times when asthma is not funny. Okay. Yeah. Just like most things in the world, it's about context. It's about time and place. Right?
My gosh.
Okay. I need to trim my beard, dude.
You need, oh my Lord.
Although we have seen, Kate Mulgrew's, romantic partner, Bennett, we have seen recently on that GalaxyCon thing Garrett, and he had a beard down to like, he had like a Moses beard. My beard.
What was that show of that guy that was in the wilderness play, and he had a bear as his sidekick, companion? It was Dan, the actor was Dan something. He had this
Grizzly huge, Adams?
Yeah. So look at it. When I look at Bennett, Kate's significant other, I look at it as a Grizzly Adams beard, but you say Moses beard, which is actually longer than a Grizzly Adams. And the longest is a ZZ Top. So he's not ZZ Top yet.
He's not a ZZ Top.
But he's definitely Moses. That's respectable beard. That's respectable beard.
It's just a,
that's a,
this is a working man's beard. This is like, oh, I'm too busy. I'm working so hard. I don't have time to really groom myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's subtle because you have gray mixed in with your dirty blonde. So
reddish.
And reddish. So it's not as prominent as if you were, let's say, Italian or Greek with a heavy, dark beard.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Speaking of Italian people, have we ever seen Bob Accardo with a beard? Have you ever seen him with a beard?
I feel like I've seen photos of him on other shows or, he's got so many looks over his career.
Yeah.
Especially with because he went bald, lost his hair so young, he started wearing hair pieces and wigs very young. So he's had so many looks. I feel like.
In terms of not off camera, but on camera roles, all the roles that he's done, I've never remembered him with a mustache or a beard.
He may have had a mustache
in Loverboy. That was with Patrick Dempsey, sort of playing a pizza delivery boy that ends up being a gigolo. And Bob Accardo plays a surgeon in there, I think, a doctor.
Really?
And his wife is cheating on him with Patrick Dempsey's character. And I think he might have a mustache there. But I don't think I remember him with a beard, like a full beard, a mountain man beard.
I'm looking to see. I don't think... Okay, hold on.
Oh, you got it? Look at that. You're so fast with your Google. You're such a fast Googler.
Wait, is that?
Hey, well, that's clearly a fake
mustache, right?
Yeah, it's a mustache. He looks good in a mustache. I like that look. actually.
Yeah, there's Bob.
What's the prod jokes? Can you just, what's the caption read?
It says,
I don't recall that role. Is that a Nickelodeon show, maybe? I don't know.
Oh my God, the internet is forever. I don't know. Oh,
by the way, for those of you listening out there, not viewing, Robbie showed me an image of Bob Picardo in sort of a 50s soda shop sort of costume, and on top of his head was a fake ice cream. And then Robbie just showed me Bob Picardo shirtless. Is he completely naked in that with a cowboy hat on? What's he got going on there?
I don't know. This is a little GIF that says, "Don't knock, just come," and he looks like can't top the cowboy from Inner Space.
Oh yes, so he's that's from Inner Space. I do recall that wardrobe.
So the internet is forever.
So for all of you who are just curious about what the visual is, if you simply sign up to be a patron on patreon.com/thedeltaflyers, you can view this.
You can see all the fun times.
You can
see all of the visual aids that we have. Okay. Yes.
It's a more complete picture of the Delta Flyers. But of course, we will always describe what is being shown on screen between Robbie and I for all of you who are listening, just so you know. That's an interesting photo of him. But you didn't find out why he's wearing that soda kind of ice cream guy.
I did not. We'll have to get him on the podcast. And
all right. We'll ask him.
Ask him, yes.
We can ask him how his butt's doing as well. Hopefully he's healed.
Yes. Sometimes we call our castmates, you know, in the middle of a podcast and catch them like Bob on the bicycle, and we cause them to crash and scrape their butt, as we did with Bob. So, But he's game for it. He said call him anytime, so we will be calling him.
I love how you put me under the bus with you on that one. We cause him to crash. It's like, yes, yeah. I'll join you on that, I guess.
We, the royal we. What are we talking about this week? Are we in season three?
Yes, we're actually in season three now, and we're doing basics part two. So the two-parter of the cliffhanger episode, basics part one is what we finished our season two review. And now we're starting our season three review.
Yep.
It's crazy. We are now, what is it now? June, July, August, September, October, November, December, January. We're about 8-9 months into this podcast now.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
We're chugging along and we're now at season three. And of course, one thing that you're going to be so happy about is today is the day that I take on the limerick.
Oh my gosh, I forgot we're switching.
This is
exciting.
You're exciting and you're happy. And yes. I'm like dreading this. I'm sitting here going.
It's stressful. It's very stressful.
I think I had a nightmare about this.
You got this. You got this. You got this. Okay.
All right, man.
Basics part two, season three premiere.
Yeah.
Great.
Yep. Okay. So Patreon patrons, stay tuned for your bonus material. Everyone else, stay tuned as Robbie and I go watch Basics part two and I stress about making a limerick.
See you soon.
Robbie and I are back from watching Basics part two.
Yes,
there's a lot of action
are.
In this one.
There was a lot of action. And you guys were on the planet a lot. I was still even more jealous.
You're so jealous
that I didn't get to go. Although I was kind of jealous. I think I did notice on watching this that how rough the terrain was for you guys. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me of that story you told about Sue. I think it was Sue falling down the hill.
Yeah.
Rolling as you guys were running or something.
Yeah.
It looked kind of rough. It definitely did. The terrain, the rocks, and there was a lot of areas where you were filming where it was pretty steep, sometimes steeper even than it photographed. Like if you really looked at it carefully, you kind of go, oh, wow, that's steeper than you first think.
Yeah. And plus, you know, that's outdoors. That's not on a soundstage. That's definitely us on location. And, you know,
and
when
the
terrain is like
and
that.
And the cold and I'm sure.
Right. But there's not just rock. There's loose rock and loose pebbles and loose dirt, so that when you're running down the hill, you take one wrong step and you're going to lose your footing. And that's what happened to Sue, Kate's stand-in, and she tumbled down and, you know, she had to go to the hospital. So yeah. That was not good. I just want to start by saying a couple of things. First of all, in a prior episode of Delta Flyers, we started to have an issue of memory where we weren't sure if the stage that we used that was far away was stage 16 or 17. I did the research. It was definitely 16. 17 was Deep Space Nine. That was directly across from 8 and 9. So 17 was their soundstage. So,
16 was our rocks and caves and all.
Yes.
And then, and I said to you when we couldn't remember, I get confused because when I did Chuck as a director and a producer for 5 years, we had stage 17 at Warner Brothers. So I couldn't remember. I'd get 17 and 16 mixed up a lot, and totally different shows and different lots, different studios.
It's 16. All right. That's one piece of business. The other order of business, when we reviewed Basics Part 1, I talked about how Chakotay and myself and Tim Russ got memos from production. You said that everyone got the memo, basically warning us about, you know, be careful when you're in town. It's a rough town. Yeah.
Go stick together.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't recall everyone getting that. I thought it was just the minority sort of saying, watch out. You might be, you know, you might face some trouble from the majority Caucasian population of this town.
Yeah.
And I promised a story for part two. And that story is the actors were sequestered at a hotel at the edge of town. It wasn't in the main part of town.
Right, right.
The main part of town did have a motel there, but that's where all the crew and all the background actors were over there. So Sue and Tarek, who played Ayala, he was there, you know, everyone.
They were all in town, in the main street.
Correct. Right. And so to get to the hotel where the principals were, we had to take a shuttle.
Right.
There's a shuttle that would run out to that, to the very outskirts of town. And I remember the production, I think Mary Howard or Brad Jacobian saying, now listen, guys, you guys can eat in town and everything like that, but just know whatever business you do, there is one, the shuttle ends at a certain time. And so we're talking about the final shuttle that goes back to the edge of town. I think it left at like 11:30 PM or 11:45. So just before midnight. And so we were warned. They said, if you don't catch that shuttle, you're going to have to walk. And remember, this is before Uber and all these, you know, ways to get back. That didn't exist back then. So we were warned. And I remember the last three series regulars that were still in town were Tuvok. So it was Tim Russ, myself, and Jennifer Lean. And Tim had decided to play poker with some of the background actors. So he was at their motel playing poker. And evidently the stakes were 5 cent poker. So this was nickel poker, right?
Right.
And Tim spent an evening with the extras. Jenny Lean and I don't know, we were just hanging out. So I remember going over to, we walked over to the motel and said to Tim, it's time to go. We have to go catch this shuttle. And he's like, fine. So we go back and we're sitting at the shuttle stop. And we're waiting for this shuttle with plenty of time. We definitely are there before the final shuttle comes.
Right.
And then Tim, all of a sudden, he goes, I said, how'd you do? How'd you do with the poker game? He goes like, oh, hey, I won big. And I'm like, you won big. I go, what stakes were you guys playing? He's like, we're playing nickels. I'm like, nickels? So he pulls out of his pocket like this huge handful like of nickels. He's got literally, I think he's got $50 in nickels, okay,
oh my
in his
God.
Hand. And he looks at us and he's like, I don't want to carry this around. I don't want to carry this around. And he looks behind us and he sees like a whatever late night fast food restaurant is open. He goes, I'm going to go change my money there. I go, Tim, please don't do this. Please don't do this. It's not like you're changing five nickels into a quarter.
Right.
You're changing $50 worth of nickels.
You know, it's like 1,000 nickels.
He's 1,000 nickels. Yeah. I said, they're going to have to count those nickels, dude. I guarantee you there's no change counting machine there. You're going to what you're going to miss the shuttle. And right. he goes, no, I'm not going to miss the shuttle. No, Bubba, I'm going to make it. And so he goes over there and we're watching. And sure enough, the shuttle, we see the shuttle coming up, drives up slowly. And I'm looking back at I can see Tim staying there. And there, I can see they're going one, two, they're counting through the nickels. And now I'm waving my hands. I'm like, Tim, I'm screaming. I'm like, Tim, hurry, Tim. And he's completely oblivious. Okay. So he's on top of the moon because he won. All right. And right. he's just like, I'm so great. Yay. I'm a poker god. And so then guess what happens? Because we are friends of his, we actually tried to ask the shuttle driver to wait, but he wouldn't. So he left. So we said, fine, we're just going to have to take this walk to the outskirts of town.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So Tim gets out there and I'm so pissed. And he's like, what? I said, you missed the shuttle and you made us miss the shuttle because we were trying to get your attention. And because we're your friends, we waited for you. And now we have no way back except for our feet. We have to walk back, dude. He's like, well, I'm sorry, man. I lost track of time. I said, I told you not to go change the money. You know, I was so mad at him.
Yeah, those damn nickels. Yeah.
And Tim and I, just so everyone knows, we've always had this crazy older brother, younger brother kind of relationship where we bicker at each other. And I was definitely bickering at him. So we start walking. And as we're walking along, the lights of the town get dimmer and dimmer. And now it's basically pitch black on like a country road. And we're walking and I'm going, this sucks. And then all of a sudden in the distance coming towards town, we see headlights. And I said, okay, this is interesting. And as the headlights get closer, we notice there are headlights belonging to a pickup truck, like an old, you know, Ford Bronco or something like just right. an old pickup truck.
Right.
And this truck drives up, slows down and stops and hits his high beams on us like he's looking at us. And I'm going, oh, my God. Oh, my God.
You're panicking.
I'm panicking because I'm only thinking about that memo saying, be careful, you know, you guys. Mm-hmm. And guess what? What does this guy see? He sees an Asian guy, a black dude, and a little blonde white girl. And it's like, and so that he's looking at the three of us thinking, you know, what the heck is this? What's going on here? And I'm thinking, we're going to die. I'm thinking right. this is literally The Hills Have Eyes, or I was really feeling like this was the territory between the Hatfield and the McCoys. Like this was like hillbilly, you know, territory. Right. And we were in trouble. You know, I said, we're going to die. And I just remember feeling
about the nickels, buddy.
Underneath my breath, I'm staring at the pickup, and also underneath my breath, I'm muttering, after they kill me, I will kill you, is what I said.
And I'll take all your nickels.
All because you had to get
all right, who was it? Changed up. Who was in the pickup truck?
Okay, so we're just standing there. The pickup truck is staring at us, and I'm just frozen in fear. And we're all three of us just standing there frozen, like, and then they slowly start up again. Yeah. And the windows are tinted out, and they just kind of like, they go really slowly past us, and then they speed off. And I look in the back and I see there's like a gun rack, and I'm going, Jesus, we really could have been killed, you know?
Jesus.
And I look at Tim and I go, thanks, man. Thank you for I almost had a heart attack just now. You know, is there what else could go wrong? And then right when I said that, it started raining. Cats and dogs is just coming down like this torrential downpour, and just it's almost like God had this crazy sense of humor. The minute I said, what else could go wrong now? And then God goes, take that. And so I look at Tim, I'm like, thanks, man. I'm right. now soaking wet. Now we're soaking wet, and we still have like half a mile to walk to get back to the hotel on the outskirts of town. Wow. So Tim and I almost were killed, basically.
Wow.
And Jennifer would have been abducted.
Wow. That's
my guess. Yeah.
Wow.
There you go.
So maybe it was good I didn't go. I just stayed back at Paramount Studios and basically saved all of you. Because that's really what my takeaway from this episode is, Paris, everybody owes Paris their lives. That's my takeaway.
Is that what you're getting from it? No, I think
the theme is everybody should thank Paris. Because he saved them all. That's my takeaway.
Is that your life lesson
for this episode? Make a like a monument to Paris because he saved everybody.
No, if you were there with us and walking back with us, it would have been more normal. It would have been two Caucasians and two minorities, so it would have balanced out a little bit better. And I think we would have had less of a less scrutiny from this pickup truck from hell, that was about to kill us. I think they would have thought, oh, okay, all right, and then drove on. Wow. I would like to think that they had been channel surfing the night before and said, wait a minute. No, we can't kill them. That's Tuvok, Kim, and Kes. And then they drove away. You see?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like the episode, the story of the episode. There was the primitive cavemen.
Yes. That
you eventually sort of befriend.
Yeah.
In the story. That's kind of like the citizens of Lone Pine, California.
You're right.
In the beginning, it was kind of dangerous and, there was sort of a, scariness and I just to it all.
Yes. And Robbie, just in case there's anybody listening from Lone Pine or used to live at Lone Pine, I apologize. That memo is what scared the crap out of me. I think if I never received that memo from production, I probably
wouldn't. You wouldn't have had those stories in your head.
No, I wouldn't.
I have a good friend that lives up at Lone Pine, actually. So.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah.
But I'm an actor. I'm a creative person. But my imagination can run wild. And my imagination was truly picturing Tim and I being murdered by the locals.
Yes,
and
gotcha. That's what I felt.
Okay, gotcha. So
on that note,
let's
talk about
our, the episode.
Yes.
Let me have your haiku synopsis.
Oh, yes. My very first haiku. I mean, I did do a haiku before, but back when we were kind of freestyling. Now that we've gotten formal. Okay, my haiku for Basics Part 2, Season 3 premiere. Kazon have the ship. Primitive life for the crew. Paris saves them all. That's it. I just had to make sure Paris gets credit for saving everybody. That's really good all job. My focus of the haiku was Paris getting the credit. So, yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Did you feel, happy that it was, you got to do a much simpler
not version? Having to rhyme
like anything? A weight?
Oh,
yeah, weight so lifted off your shoulders?
Such a weight lifted.
Yeah. Okay. Now I was debating because
Probably could have used Rebecca's help.
I actually thought about messaging Rebecca, but I said, you know what? No, I'm going to stand on my own two feet. I can do this.
Okay.
You even told me, you said, I know you can do this, right?
Yes.
And then I thought I can get really, really, put a lot of production value and maybe do this in an Irish accent since
lyrics
come from there. But then I thought, no, I'm not going to do that.
No,
I'm not going to go to the Lucky Charms accent. I'm not going to do any type of, Northern Ireland accent or anything.
Right.
Even though I enjoy Irish accents, I think they're great.
Yes.
But my limerick is it has a little haiku-ness to it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because I feel like I'm so used to doing haiku that it bled into my very first limerick.
It's got a little sort of abstract quality.
Yes, it's definitely more abstract. So here we go. My limerick, my very first limerick synopsis for the Delta Flyers for the episode Basics, Part 2. Stranded on planet, left for dead. No shelter, no water, no bread. The doctor helps out, while Suter reroutes. Paris sets course, full speed ahead.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Like that?
No bread. Oh, nice.
Yeah.
It's good. It's fun. It's exciting, right?
It was exciting. And also abstract too.
It was a little abstract.
You set a course for home. I was like, Paris sets course full speed ahead.
Yeah.
Ahead rhymed with the bread and the dead.
That's what poetry is all about. It is getting a little abstract now and then.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Very good. There's our haiku. There's our limerick. Let's talk about it.
Sure. Still written by Pillar, obviously. Still directed by Colby. So the same writer and director from Part 1 as Part 2. I just want to start by saying the very first line that you hear from Chakotay, the very beginning of the episode, when he's helping out Wildman. Wildman's struggling, holding her baby, and he's like, don't push yourself. And then he says, that goes for everyone. Perspiring wastes water. And I've never thought of that ever in my life.
Stop wasting water.
By perspiring, which is like crazy.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever been given that advice on any, you know, activity that you've done in school or anything, don't sweat. You're going to waste water, which is,
I don't know how you control sweating.
Yeah.
That's a tough one to control. I mean, I think you can control the energy output that you have.
Yeah.
If sweating is a result of a certain amount of energy output, then I guess you could lower your energy output to preserve moisture or preserve water. But you may, in a hot environment, just be sitting there and sweating.
True.
You're not putting out any energy. It's just the body's natural function of cooling itself is wasting the water. So I don't know. That's a tricky one, Chakotay. I mean, he's a smart guy, Akuchi Moya and all. People of my people.
I'm gonna throw this story at the fans right now.
Yes.
I may have already talked about this, but I'm gonna say it again because you just said, I don't know how you control sweating. And I'm gonna have to disagree with you because of that one fateful day that we were filming on the bridge and it was your close-up. And you indeed were sweating, but you were only sweating on the side of your face away from camera. And I said to you, and I made mention of that while we were filming. I go, Robbie McNeil, you're such a professional. You don't sweat where the camera can see it, only on the side of your face away from camera.
Did I have like a tissue or something? Was I tapping? Maybe I was dabbing my.
Possibly.
Maybe I did that. I don't know. Okay.
I don't remember you dabbing anything. I just remember that to me was really comical. I'm like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Because like everything, like literally, it was like, it wasn't like tons of sweat, but you can definitely see it was rolling down your cheek on the side away from where the camera was.
And yeah, I thought,
what the heck? How did you do that? I mean, I sweat on both sides if I'm sweating. But that day,
I was a professional.
Sweat master. Yes.
Yeah. I'm pretty good. I'm pretty professional.
All right.
Yeah. So they're still on the planet.
Yeah.
Everybody's still on this primitive planet. I was mostly excited to see Neelix's team. I think at the end of the last episode, Neelix said something like, Chakotay was like, Team B, you're with me. Team A, Alpha Team, Delta Team. And then, or Beta Team or whatever. And then it comes to Neelix. Neelix is like, Delta Team, follow me.
Yeah, this was after mine. I was Gamma Team. He was Delta Team. Yes.
Delta Team, you're with me. So I was very excited when I'm like, oh, everybody's there. How's Delta Team doing? How's the Neelix group doing?
Not that well.
No, not that well. Hogan gets eaten. So Delta Team, maybe we should not put Neelix in charge of any away teams. That's our takeaway.
I know that later in the episode, he apologizes. He's saying, I feel it's my fault. And the whole time I'm like, yeah, it's totally your fault. You are responsible for killing Hogan. My God.
Yes, exactly.
Because if Neelix just helped him pick up, you remember that? Neelix is holding the bone.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he throws it back down on the ground. All you had to do was help him. If you helped him pick it up at that second and walk away, Hogan would still be alive.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Hogan.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
By the way, so yeah, and then we find Paris is not dead. Paris has gotten his shuttle back up and running, and he's on this kind of, he's running away from the Kazon who are chasing him.
Yeah.
And boy, if I knew it was as simple as just all stop, hit the brakes, let the Kazon fly by and then shoot him a couple times and boom, like, why are we ever in a battle ever then? If that's the way you can do it.
That was so reminiscent of the movie Top Gun, where Maverick like is being chased by the MiG and he puts all stop and the MiG flies past him. But of course, they're going at supersonic speeds. Whereas in this, from our relation, when you slow down, it's almost like a turtle passing another turtle. It's like so slow when he passes you. It's like, what is going on?
I also started thinking about, okay, I have a Tesla Model 3 is the car that I have.
Correct.
And it has auto collision features.
Yeah.
So if I am heading too fast toward something, it will warn me and it will start to brake long before I even see it.
Correct.
And so I started thinking, all right, that's my Tesla Model 3. That's the entry level Tesla has that right now.
Yeah.
And we're talking about starships.
Right.
That are chasing me, dead behind me, shooting. As soon as I hit the all stop, like my Tesla, you would think that that other ship would be locked in on some kind of computer control autopilot that wouldn't allow them just to fly
over you.
That they would have some, but anyway, you know, I'm just saying.
I'm just going to say that failsafe in the Kazon patrol ship malfunctioning.
It didn't work.
Like he should have stopped, but he didn't. Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
What I wrote down in my notes, which was more interesting, I said Paris does his impersonation of the caretaker. Because in Caretaker, the old man kept saying, yeah, not enough time. And then here you are, I don't have time for this. You said it three times. I don't have time for this. And after you after you eliminate the threat, you're like, I told you, I don't have time for this. So you say that over and over again.
I said that like three times. I know.
Yeah. I want to make a t-shirt that just has all of your sayings. So it'll say pepperoni, and then it'll say, I don't have time for this. And just all the Paris sayings.
It's the Voyager.
It's the Voyager, exactly. So
yeah, and then we go into sick bay, and the doctor's giving the baby a checkup, and he says, "This is not Chakotay's son."
Oh, I know. What the
what?
Heck? What?
What? The heck? It's not Chakotay's son. Seska seems truly shocked and surprised. I have to say, I just don't believe that Seska didn't check the baby's DNA before this. Like, really?
Yeah, that was a little crazy.
And even
and that baby doesn't, okay, we've seen the baby's face, right?
Yes.
And you see the little Cardassian little forehead ridge thing, but you clearly do not see any Kazon features.
Any Kazon features? No. And by the way, that baby's bald, and I'm telling you Kazon have big hair.
Yeah.
Kazon's hair
it is
huge.
So but this is just so bizarre because she did inject herself with his DNA. So so the question remains, how did she get that wrong? How did she not, I don't know. It was perplexing, to say the least.
Also, why didn't Seska ask the computer long before about the crew compliment like the doctor does at the end of that scene? He goes, he's just got it easy. Like nobody thought of this when you were taking over the ship. Hey, computer, any life signs? Where are the life? Like it's a quick question.
Yes.
But they obviously didn't think about it.
No. You know, they were too excited to commandeer the Voyager.
Yeah.
That they were like, because they did make mention of the fact that there's two missing crewmen. And they could have at that point said, computer, tell us who's on the ship right now. And they would have found that out. It would have been one Beta Z. You know, we would have known it was Suter. But that's another a hole in the script right there. Right?
Yep.
Unfortunately. Okay. Harry and B'Elanna find eggs.
Big eggs. Did you make an omelet? Did you do hard boiled poached? What does the captain like?
I think she likes medium. I like she
over
likes
medium?
the yolk a little bit runny. Yeah. Mm. So, you know, you have to really pay attention when you're preparing eggs and make it a medium. It's not easy.
That was very interesting, the eggs. Yeah.
But look who's together. It's Harry and B'Elanna again right there.
Yeah.
Did you were you jealous a little bit?
I don't I don't think so. I was busy saving the show, Garrett, while you were out making over easy or over mediums.
So many.
I was saving the whole series. I was saving Star Trek as a franchise. I was saving Voyager. I was saving the lives of all of our crew.
Well, but, thank you. Thanks for being welcome. A hero. You're busy being a hero. Ayala, you get to see him cutting hair. I cut Janeway's hair. I don't remember filming that. I have no recollection of that. By the way,
I have seen that they were using a lot of hair to start the fire. Like, if you're having so much trouble starting the fire that you're going to, you know, use hair, which is a thing, you really got to be careful how much you use. Like, you're going to go burn through all your hair pretty quickly. Second of all, when Chakotay says, you know, Captain, you've got the only Indian here who doesn't know how to start a fire.
Yeah.
I gotta say, like, that bothered me a little bit. And I know that I'm the non-native guy. Yeah. I'm a white middle-aged man. So I am not from a perspective to be able to tell anyone what's right or wrong about things. Mm-hmm. But I guess I just found it like, here the writers are reinforcing a stereotype. And it happened a couple times in this episode. Happened with the bow and arrow. It happened with starting a fire. He says, you know, I'm the only, you know, Indian that doesn't know how to start a fire. I didn't like it when I was a kid and I don't like it. You know, I can't do it. Couldn't do it when I was a kid. I couldn't do it now. I guess it would be like any stereotype saying, oh, I guess I'm the only black person who doesn't do blah, blah, blah. Just because the black character says that doesn't mean reinforcing that stereotype is not a good thing. So that sort of bothered me, I guess, a little bit. I just have a radar for those kinds of stereotypes. They bother me, especially in Star Trek.
I knew.
Yeah.
Yes. And I knew you were going to be bothered by that. I actually made note of that. I said, Robbie is going to be annoyed by the fire starting scene. And I knew that was going to trigger you.
It triggers
me. But I'm going to disagree with you.
You could, yeah.
Yeah, I'm cool. going to disagree with you a little bit about the other scene you mentioned about the bow and arrow, because I think that played against stereotype, because when he grabs the bow and says, like, you know, my people don't shoot bows and arrows. I've never done this before. And Tuvok goes, no, that's for me. I taught archery at the Vulcan Institute of Self-Defense. So I felt like that was playing against stereotype.
I think that in that situation, it actually was a much better treatment of the issue and using that device to kind of change perspective in a good way. But I did feel like the starting of the fire, I don't know, was bumpier, was clunkier to me and didn't feel quite as good. Agreed. I also think that this leads me to a general thought I had that I'll throw out now. I found this episode sort of overloaded a bit with a tonnage of kind of toxic masculinity. I don't know how else to put it. The Kazon who take over our ship are a group of very stereotypically sort of primitive male, toxic, dominating male personality. Yes. And then you had this caveman society who's trying to give away and trade women because they've got this caveman primitive male thing. And I was thinking halfway through this episode that it would have been interesting on Star Trek, and particularly the Star Trek that had a female captain, to take some of those gender identity storylines and flip them. You know, what if on this caveman society, it had been a female dominated primitive group? That was developing, and maybe they were, you know, exploitive or treated the men in those typical ways, and maybe the lesson learned was, we don't do that anymore in gender ways. We don't dominate gender, you know, whether it's male over women or women over men. I don't know. I feel like there's an opportunity in our show to do something different than other shows. And when it comes to some of those stereotypes, this one felt like it had a lot of that sort of primitive male.
Yeah.
I'm a man and you're the woman. And anyway, it was a lot of it.
I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you.
All right. Moving on. So they start fires. I found it interesting that I made a note here that just an interesting idea to see all of our crew stuck on this planet with zero technology, that all of that technology is stripped away, that they're starting fires this way and, you know, and bows and arrows and clubs and all of it, you know.
Yeah.
Using the cloth from Hogan's uniform after he was, you know, killed by the lizard dragon or whatever. Using yeah. that to drain, to make what did he say? A water collection kind of thing, you know, trying to get rainwater or something.
Yeah, my memory of the show was not that Hogan died that early. My memory of the show was that Hogan died inside the caves with everybody later, but yeah. that's not the case. He died at the very beginning.
Yeah.
So in the storyline, obviously Neelix wanders away, gets captured, and so does Kes. And the funny part of that is when Kes was saying, "You shouldn't go too far away from camp, Neelix." And I'm thinking, neither should you. And then she gets captured at that time, right?
That's right.
So on the rescue party, that when Chakotay goes to rescue Neelix and Kes, you notice who's in that rescue party, right? In the teal uniform.
Who was it?
Dennis Matalone wearing a wig. Yeah, he's got.
Oh, that's funny.
He's got a short. Dennis Matalone, who we've interviewed before, our head of stunts, our stunt coordinator. He is in this episode wearing a wig as a Starfleet crew member. So he's holding the spear, and he's the one when they get trapped by the Neanderthals in the entrance of the cave. They go further into the cave. And as they walk along slowly to try to get past the serpent creature, it's Dennis who slips and falls and gets eaten.
Oh, so, that was Dennis?
That's Dennis. Yeah.
I just heard from Dennis this morning. He loved, he listened to the interview that we did with him, loved it. And he said he shared it with Tom Morga, who was one of our regular stuntmen on the show.
Yeah, because we talk about Tom too.
And right? we talk about Tom, and Tom loved it as well. And Tom wants to do. Tom wants to do the podcast, so that
we can bring Tom in for sure. Yeah, that's awesome. Great
yeah.
idea.
Yeah,
I
that
can't
rescue
you recognize him.
That's funny. I didn't. That rescue scene was great. Right before the rescue scene, though, we go into the doctor and
Suter. Yeah,
Suter are talking.
Him. Yeah,
and the doctor had a line that I wrote down. He says, "Well, one hologram and one sociopath may not be much of a match for the Kazon, but it will have to do."
Yeah.
It's like, that's a brilliant line.
Yeah.
One hologram and one sociopath.
Yeah.
Good. He gets good lines. They give him good lines.
Yeah. Suter is extra creepy with the, you know, that soft spoken line delivery of his. Yeah. It's great. He did such a great job with that character.
My heart broke for him having to go back to that dark place and as a character when he had really use these Vulcan techniques and the mentorship of Tuvok to change himself fundamentally and do it without drugs or medicine or anything. And
definitely. And you definitely see that after he's performed his first kill, you know, and he comes later in the episode, he performs that first kill and he kind of falls to the ground and I got emotional. I did. Like, oh man, like this is like, you know, we're really rooting for the bad guy in this time. You know, his humanity has come through because he's almost controlled his murderous rage. And now he has to unleash it in order to save the rest of us, you know, to save the ship. And it's just, it's heart wrenching to see that. It really is.
Suter has the idea, by the way. Suter is the one that asked the doctor for a portable Thoron generator, which is the thing that buys them time to do everything they do because it disables, as Seska says later, that's an old Maquis trick to, you know, interfere with the tricorders and all of our technology. So So Seska suspects that the repairs are being sabotaged around this time. The ship keeps breaking every day. They're like, it doesn't make sense. Paris sends a message to the doctor about a backup phaser couplings plan that he's going to
overload them.
Yeah, he's going to take out the phaser couplings and that they're going to go to the backup. And if he overloads them, that it will disable everyone on the ship, that it will work. When he first sends the message, he says to the doctor, "I hope you get this message or else I'm a dead duck." And Rebecca was like, "Wait, pause that for a second." She's like, "A dead duck, is that the phrase?" And I was like, "Sitting duck,
yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah." That's another phrase that's going on your t-shirt, dude. It's gonna say, "I'm a dead duck."
Right, what there. Is a dead duck?
I don't know.
Did I make that up? Did they write that? I don't know.
I made a note of that too, but I knew you'd bring it up, so I'm gonna let you bring that up.
But it is the backup couplings plan that Paris has, and right around that time, Suter has killed his first. They go looking he goes back into the Jeffries tubes. And because Jessica's suspicious of all of these things keep breaking every day, she sends people into the Jeffries tubes. Hey, let's look and see if we can find these people that are hiding. And Suter has to make his first kill. He collapses, like you said.
Yeah, that struggle.
It's very sad. He says, I just need to breathe, see the light that is my breath. That was a nice line. Obviously he got that from Tuvok, but great scene.
Yep. I'm going to rewind just a little bit to the point where, you know, Chakotay's been gone for a while. So now Janeway sort of like, get some people together to Kim and let's go and find out what happened to them. Mm-hmm. And so then when she does realize that, Chakotay and the rescue party are probably trapped in the serpent tunnel, she then says, who can run here? And then we find out Torres was on the Academy Decathlon team. Ayala, our friend Tarek Ergin, has a line here. I think this is his first line. He says, yeah. She goes, anyone else here can run? And Ayala says, yeah. So that was his big debut, I think, line-wise. So,
that's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, I do remember that Tarek raising his hand and he had the line there. By the way, you know, when they're running out of this cave, when they finally get cleared to run out of the cave, and they decide, let's take these wooden spears that we're not even trained in because we're technology people, and we're going to actually break the rocks so completely it will stop this giant cave monster who lives in the rocks. I don't know, very risky move. Like,
it was very risky.
Yeah, clearly it worked out because they stuck the things up there and just in time the rocks collapse. And
yeah,
but I'm like, guys, maybe you should have thought of a better plan. Like, I don't know.
Kim studied that at Starfleet Academy. He studied loosening rocks at the cave entrances. Okay. So that is what happened. You saw Harry was right up there. So he was the one that provided the fulcrum.
Gotcha.
So that rock came down and caused like an avalanche of
rocks.
So
love it.
That's it.
Okay. There we go.
I'm gonna go with that. Okay.
Okay. So we talked about Suter killing his first guy in the Jeffries tubes, his dramatic kind of thing. Kula has a little scene with Seska, not a big scene, but important, because he says, a couple of our scouts destroyed a shuttle. So we got them. We got whoever escaped in that shuttle. So
that was your message that you sent.
Oh, yeah. It was the tricky thing, right?
And
Seska's like, what about life signs? Did they find any life signs, any bodies? Mm-hmm. And Kala's like, I don't know. And she's like, there's two people missing and
was a typical husband wife conversation.
Yeah,
like the husband saying, I took out the trash, and the wife's like, but did you
close empty the out lid the
did
freezer?
You empty the fr- yeah did you yeah. There's always the addendum to the command.
Back on the planet, Kes says that the baby is sick.
Yes.
And the volcano is about to blow. So things are not going well on the planet.
Yes. I remember it's Kim that actually directs everyone's attention to the volcanic eruption beginning. And I actually remember filming that. And I remember I was like, so where am I looking exactly? And Rick Colby was like, okay, your eye line's going to be this. And I know we've done a lot of green screen stuff already before this. But I just felt really stupid that day doing that. I just, because I'm the one that starts the staring at nothing, right? I'm like, up there. And I just remember feeling really uncomfortable filming that scene. I don't know why.
That's funny because we do it so much. Yeah.
Yeah. I also ran across in looking at stuff that I had in storage. There's like for every episode, we had a set photographer that showed up that took still pictures of our episode. And they would usually pick one or two days of the 7-day shoot and they would take pictures. Mm-hmm. So this set photographer traveled with us evidently to to Lone Pine because I found in storage like a slide, like a Kodak Ektachrome slide that was obviously taken by the set photographer, of me holding the spear, but I'm spinning it around like a baton and just by myself. I'm just out in the middle of the, it's an interesting photo because there's nobody around me. And I didn't know that he took this picture of me because I was just goofing off doing this like staff twirl, like a martial arts twirling right. of the staff. And he captured it on film on with his camera. And clearly he gave it to me as a gift. And I did not remember that at all, but
wow.
going through some storage stuff, I found that recently. I'm like,
oh,
hey.
That's cool.
Yeah. So
that's very cool.
Yeah. So Kim noticed a volcanic eruption. Seska confronts doctor. Crew must have run from the volcanic
explosion.
Yeah, she kills
his program. She kills the doctor's program, and we don't know.
Yep.
The end of this episode, what's going to happen? So,
well, it's really smart of the doctor to have that recording that he made for Suter just in case. So it was like a chess game. It's like a chess game between the doctor and Seska. And the doctor's like, okay, she's probably going to, you know, disable my program. So I'm going to record a message to Suter. Mm-hmm. And it was like a, it was an awesome pep talk, you know, but it was also sad because you knew that this could be a one-way mission for Suter, you know, at that point. So it was,
I thought that was a really emotional scene. The pep talk from the doctor. I really did.
Yeah.
I thought it was great. And I thought Bob did a great job with that.
So. Yeah. And the whole, cause he was trying to take that lightly cause he knew that Suter is struggling with the killing again. Right. And he's just like, he's like, you know what you have to do. And you know when to do it. And it was just the way he said that. And I was just like, oh my gosh. It's like I'm getting choked up watching this.
I know. And we see that Paris is ready and waiting, but he really needs the doctor to do his part. And now the audience knows the doctor's out of commission.
Yeah.
We go back to the planet. Chakotay ends up saving this cave lady who's stuck out in the lava flow. And that's a wonderful opportunity to see like, the cave people, these planet people, you know, see that we can be their friends and we're good people. And so the story sort of changes there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing like saving someone from the enemy, to show the enemy that we're good people. Yeah. Right. So that was a good scene to have. Also I want to bring light to the Talaxian ships. I like those ships. Those ships.
Yeah. They were cool.
They're really cool. Looking.
And Talaxians were very helpful here. Praxin. Is that his name? Praxin.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Praxim.
Yeah. So Paris starts shooting at the phaser couplings. And Suter in engineering ends up coming in with one of the Kazon weapons that he took.
Yeah.
He took a Kazon weapon from the one guy that he killed and uses that to kill everybody in engineering.
Can I tell you my notes on this part? My note says Suter summons his inner John McClane from Die Hard and takes out all the Kazon in engineering.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote on that one.
And then he's trying to do something on the panel. And just before he hits the last button, he's shot by one of the dying Kazon.
Yeah.
And he reaches out, stretches out and hits the button. Now, I don't remember the doctor telling Suter about Paris's plan.
He didn't. So we have to assume that that was spoken to him or relayed to him at another point in the story. Because, in that pep talk, he doesn't talk about that. But the fact that the doctor says, you know what to do and when to do it. That to me was not only referring to having to kill the Kazon, but also to disable the backup couplings. Right?
Gotcha. That makes sense. I didn't make that connection, what to do and when to do it. I thought more generally, but you're right. That's actually exactly. That's great. Paris's plan works. It was really sad to me, even though Seska's a bad person, that she died and the poor baby was crying.
She didn't even turn back to Culla. You know, when she's on her last dying breaths, she walks towards the crying baby. She stumbles towards the crying baby and dies within, you know, an arm's reach of the baby.
Yeah, very sad.
It was very sad. It was very art house film kind of thing.
Speaking of sad, we go back to the planet and the caveman decides to help them with the baby there and give them a little something that makes the baby stop crying on the planet. And
So caveman Vicks Vapor Rub was
Vicks
given
Vapor
to
Rub
the
to the baby. But he also points, and I love their language. I always think about the actors when they come on our show to do these alien parts where they're speaking a made up language. Yeah. like, was it scripted or how much did they make up? Or, you know, I think it was usually scripted, actually. But anyway, this made up language, when he points to like which direction they could go to safety, he points, he says, sad kadunk. And I just thought, I like a language that's sad kadunk. Right? That's a good, I don't know what it means, but sad.
Is that what he said? Sad kadunk.
Sad kadunk.
Which, the minute you say that, that just makes me come up with badunkadunk. So, which refers to your booty. But yeah. You know,
badunkadunk.
Yeah. I wonder if that was scripted. Yeah. Probably, it was probably scripted.
Well, it happened right around the time the baby died. And when he said sad kadunk, I was like, that's how I feel. I feel the same way. Sad kadunk.
Aww.
Badunkadunk. Okay. Yeah. And Paris comes in and he saves the day.
Yeah.
He's awesome. And then everybody comes back and they don't take time to like wash their face with the grease or fix their hair or do anything. They're like right back at it.
There you go. That's the way it is. What's your life lesson?
My life lesson, my theme for this episode is something like, even when you don't have the help of the things that you're familiar with, if you stay focused, there's always a solution. So like the people, you know, all of us on the planet, or all of you guys on the planet, you didn't have the things you were familiar with. You didn't have the ship, the technology, any of that, but you stayed focused. You worked together as a team and found a solution. And even for Paris, there was a solution. So, you know, to save the ship. So even when you don't have those things, stay positive.
Okay.
Stay focused.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
I'm going to say there that the life lesson from this episode for me is that no matter what, there is always a peaceful resolution to conflict. And I'm referring to the conflict between the cave people and the Voyager crew, right? I mean, the minute you showed that compassion of saving the cave person, that Chakotay saved the cave person, that changed everything. I mean, the whole mindset just, it flipped immediately from aggressors to, wait, you could be our friends too. Yeah. It's like, so I do feel that there is always a peaceful resolution.
I like it.
Unless you're Suter. But then with Suter, it's a little bit like, you know, the life lesson there is there's even in someone who's literally been not racked with guilt, but somebody who's involved in a lot of evilness, you know, and a lot of destruction, even in those people, there is that goodness that you can find within that person, you know, that and he did care about, because let's face it, at one point, the doctor thinks he's going to get away. The doctor thinks he's going to use this as an opportunity to escape his prison basically and take off and leave everybody without any help. But no, Suter shows us that he's still loyal to the crew and still loyal to Voyager, even though his past is filled with just, you know, that murderous rage that he's had. So, but yeah, so those are my two life lessons from this episode.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, this was great. Here we go. Season 3 off and running.
Look at that. Paris is still alive. He's not dead.
Yeah.
So next week, Robbie, we are going to be reviewing the episode Flashback. And for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for our bonus material where we will have a special guest, Martha Hackett, who played Seska, will be
Martha Hackett. Yeah, she's going to answer some questions about this season 3 premiere and her
death scene.
So, yeah. Her big death scene. I know.
Well, not her true farewell, Robbie. She does appear later.
That's true.
So, but at least her farewell from this reality.
I'm excited to hear her memories.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good. Well, off we go into season 3. We'll see you guys soon. Thanks.
See ya.
Bye.